I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be sorry from bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha room, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparivararatna Mandala Pudza Mega Samundra Saparana Samayahum. Welcome to Sakya Pandita's Applying the Sage's Intent. Last week we talked about the five paths, and tonight we're going to talk about the ten bhumis, or the ten grounds. Last week we explained that there is a sort of correspondence between these two. And when you get to the third path, the path of seeing, that's the equivalent of the first bhumi. So that's where we're going to start tonight, on the first bhumi. Abhi Rinpoche, in his commentary, he anticipates the hypothetical question, well, why do we even need to study these? We're not there yet anyway. Right. So he answers that by saying, one might ask whether it's absolutely necessary to teach the five paths and the ten bodhisattva bhumis at this time, since we do not yet have the ability to understand them directly. The answer is that we must know about them as a prerequisite for developing spiritually and making progress on the paths to enlightenment. It's a bit like preparing to travel to another country. Before we set off on our trip, we first prepare ourselves by trying to learn something about the place, the climate, the customs, and so forth. So that's his answer to about why we study this. I would also add that it's just an amazing incentive when you see what's at the end of the line, the reward for doing all this practice. What is a bhumi? Bhumi is actually translated as level or ground, but it's one of those words that's usually just left as bhumi. It's like karma or one of those words that's used a lot. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what it means in terms of the word itself, but it's a level, but it's also a ground where you stand on. It has that connotation to it. Sakya Pandita defines it as that which acts as the basis for special excellent qualities. The word excellent here means the noble qualities or virtues of the noble ones or the exalted ones. Beings who are on the bhumis are called exalted bodhisattvas. There's ordinary bodhisattvas, like us, and there's exalted bodhisattvas, and noble or exalted refers to bodhisattvas that have attained the bhumis. The bhumi is the basis for the special excellent qualities that we're going to hear about tonight, according to Sakya Pandita. Abhi Rinpoche starts off by saying in his commentary, the word stage or bhumi generally means a level of spiritual attainment. Its defining characteristic is that which acts as the basis for excellent spiritual qualities. And then he goes on to say, it's sometimes asked why there are neither more nor fewer than 10 stages of the Arya Bodhisattva path. Arya means exalted here. And then he says, this is because although the realization of ultimate reality arising from each of the 10 stages is the same, the qualities which arise from the subsequent practices differ. Here, in order to gain the qualities of the subsequent practices on the Bodhisattva path, the practitioner must accomplish the 10 perfections. Now, normally we talk about 6 perfections, but there is a listing which lists 10. So Rinpoche continues by saying, the 10 perfections relate to the 10 stages of the Arya Bodhisattva path. Each of these 10 stages has the quality of being free from something. It may be said that they have crossed the 4 mighty rivers of suffering. They, meaning the bodhisattvas. What are the 4 rivers of suffering? Birth, old age, sickness, and death. And they are free from the 5 fears. The 5 fears are the lack of livelihood, untimely death, spreading of disrepute, evil destinies, I would presume that to mean the lower realms, and the 5th one is the lack of confidence in the midst of an assembly. Meaning if you have a lot of Dharma practitioners and there's a discourse or a debate and there's a whole bunch of people listening to what you say, you don't get stage fright. As we all know, that's one of the fears that people have. Rinpoche continues by saying, one should understand by implication that these qualities increase gradually from the first level up to the 10th. So the qualities are there, but as you go up, they increase. Okay, so we're going to dive into this a little more here to understand it. Even though the Arya Bodhisattvas are free from fears and suffering, they deliberately give the appearance of taking birth, growing old, becoming ill, and dying in order to benefit sentient beings. They develop 12 sets of 100 excellent qualities which arise in a single moment on the first level. And these are described in the Sutra on the 10 grounds. What are the 12 sets? Now, we're starting at the first Bhumi, called Supremely Joyful, and we'll explain why it's called that. And so we're getting 100 of these, and I'm going to list these 12 qualities, and there's 100 of each of these, okay? So the first one is attaining 100 meditative absorptions and dwelling in them. So in the first Bhumi, the attainment is 100 different types of meditative absorptions and dwelling in them. The second quality is seeing 100 Buddhas. The third one is understanding the Buddha's sustaining powers. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to talk about the Buddhas and their powers and so on, so stay tuned. There'll be a great elaboration of that one later. The fourth quality is causing 100 world realms to quake. In the sutras, there's lots of instances where the Buddha gave a teaching or did a miracle or did something, and all these world systems start quaking. It's like they have earthquakes. It's like the earth element itself responds to what the Buddha did, and people presumably know, oh, something's going on. The fifth one is going to 100 pure realms. So when you're on the first Bhumi, you can travel to these pure realms, these Buddha realms, where the Buddhas live, so to speak, and experience them. The sixth one is illuminating 100 world realms. And we're going to talk about what illuminating means later. The seventh one is bringing 100 sentient beings to spiritual maturity. In the sutras, very often it'll list who is attending the teaching that the Buddha's giving. And then at the end it'll say, and 500 of them attained arhatship, and 500 of them, it's a result of being there in the presence of the Buddha when he teaches or does a miracle or something. The eighth one is dwelling for 100 eons. Now, we've talked before about eons, and there's different kinds of eons, and how long are they. Suffice it to say, it is a really long, long time. And so you can dwell for 100 eons. The ninth one is penetrating 100 previous and subsequent eons through supernormal intuition. Previous and subsequent eons is another way of saying going back in time, going forward in time. For 100 eons, which is a lot of time. The tenth one is opening 100 doors of Dharma. Presumably that means Dharma teaching. The 11th one is displaying 100 bodies, emanating 100 bodies. At this level in the first bhumi, the Bodhisattva has the power of 100 emanations. And then the 12th one is displaying 100 bodhisattvas as the retinue of each of these previous bodies. They can manifest 100 bodies, and each of those bodies, each one has a retinue of 100 bodhisattvas. So 100 times 100, that's 10,000, right? So 10,000 bodhisattvas in your retinues. So those are the 12 sets of excellent qualities. And on the first bhumi, they're all at 100. So guess what happens now? Going on, Rinpoche says, these excellent qualities are multiplied at each level. These numbers that we're going to go through, there's different ways of writing the same number. You know, you can write to the 10th power. You read these lists in different texts. You might see different numbers, but I don't think they're really different. They're just different way of calculating it or saying it, you know, writing it. Just to go through the increase here. So when we get to the second bhumi, the stainless, the 100 jumps up to 1,000. So you can emanate 1,000 bodies, you can see 1,000 Buddhas, and so on and so on. All 12 of these go up to 1,000. On the third bhumi, it jumps up to 100,000. 100,000 emanations, 100,000 Buddhas. Fourth bhumi, it goes up to 1 billion. On the fifth bhumi, it goes up to 10 billion. On the sixth bhumi, it goes up to 1 trillion. Do you even know how much a trillion is? I think it's 1,000 billion, isn't it? On the seventh bhumi, it goes up to 100 quadrillion. And another way of saying that is 100,000 trillion. That's like the public debt or something, right? And the eighth bhumi, it's equal to the number of atoms in 100,000 world systems. Our universes. On the ninth bhumi, it's equal to the number of atoms in 1,000,000 world realms. And on the tenth bhumi, it's equal to the number of atoms in inexpressibly many or Buddha realms. Plus, there are other excellent qualities as well that are not even listed in the list. So that's the the increase in the numbers as you go up the boomies kind of gives your mind a stretch, doesn't it? Apay Rinpoche continues saying, the word bhumi literally means soil or ground, and the significance of employing this word for the Bodhisattva stages is that, just as the ground is the support for all things, animate and inanimate, the 10 bhumis support all the myriad qualities attained by Mahayana practitioners who have reached the stages of the enlightening path. From the viewpoint of the Mahayana doctrine, the term Bodhisattva Bhumi refers to the mental quality, which is the unification of method and wisdom. In other words, when the wisdom realizing emptiness is merged with great compassion, this is known as the stages of the Arya Bodhisattvas. Now we're going to go through the bhumis and talk about their characteristics and qualities. The first bhumi is called supremely joyful because the bodhisattva experiences the unification of method and wisdom for the first time. He sees the nature of reality directly and is very joyful about it. He joyfully engages in many supplications and prayers, especially the prayer of Samantabhadra. He knows that he can now be of much more benefit to sentient beings and feels very happy about this. On this level, the Bodhisattva achieves the perfection of generosity. If you remember to the last lesson when we talked about the five paths, the first two paths, the meditation on emptiness, is still conceptual. It's what we do. We study the text about emptiness, and then we do the emptiness meditation. But when you get to the third path, the path of seeing, that's when the Bodhisattva actually experiences emptiness directly. We don't see it directly. We sort of know about it conceptually. But on the third path, the seeing is direct. The experience is direct. And that's what the first bhumi is. It's this experience of emptiness becomes much more, I don't want to say real, but more vivid, more direct. There's a direct seeing of it. And that generates joy. It's like, oh my goodness, now I can really be of some help to beings. So that's why it's called supremely joyful. The second bhumi is called stainless. And Rinpoche says, the Bodhisattva becomes extremely pure and achieves the perfection of morality. The Bodhisattva is now free from dualistic thought regarding true existence of the three factors. What are the three factors? The doer, the receiver, and the act. So those are all empty, and the Bodhisattva is free from any dualistic thought about that. Because of this thorough purity of body, speech, and mind, the Bodhisattva accomplishes the 10 virtuous deeds in a complete way. It's said that from this stage onwards, Bodhisattva will be free from all immoral activity, even during dreams. Now, there are some scholars who disagree that Bodhisattvas dream at all after reaching the first bhumi, since dreams are a product of deluded mind. However, there are two responses to this. One is that although the Bodhisattva may not actually have dreams, since he is able to appear in many different manifestations, including that of animals, why can't he appear as a human being who dreams? Another response is that it's just hypothetical, like the hypothetical postulation of a Buddha lacking compassion. In other words, Supposing that the Bodhisattva on the second bhumi were to dream, he wouldn't dream of an immoral activity. The third bhumi, luminous, it is said that the wisdom of the third bhumi is like a fire consuming the fuel of knowable objects, issuing forth rays of light in the process. It is for this reason that the third bhumi is known as the luminous or the illuminator. It is likened to the sun. Knowable means to be known. As realization increases, there are fewer and fewer knowable objects to be known. The Bodhisattva has a vision of transcendental wisdom, which is similar to the color of copper. So this stage is likened not only to the sun, but also to the metal copper. And the Bodhisattva attains the perfection of patience. The fourth bhumi is called the radiant because the copper-colored light first seen on the third bhumi becomes even more intense. The Bodhisattva now engages primarily in the perfection of enthusiasm or joyous effort. All other qualities follow this because without effort, one cannot succeed in any kind of practice. It's the cause of both accumulations. In other words, effort is needed for accumulating both merit and wisdom. The Bodhisattva now practices especially the 37 practices of a Bodhisattva, also known as the 37 factors conducive to enlightenment. As a result of meditating on these, his meditational vision becomes even greater than that of a Bodhisattva on the third bhumi. The fifth bhumi is called difficult to conquer. This great Bodhisattva cannot be defeated by Maras. That is why this bhumi is known as difficult to conquer. On this bhumi, the Bodhisattva's principal emphasis is on the perfection of meditative concentration. The Bodhisattva gains deep realization of the Four Noble Truths. Even though the Bodhisattvas on the earlier bhumis also realize and understand the Four Noble Truths, a Bodhisattva on the fifth bhumi understands them in very precise detail. Because his meditation is so advanced, his realization of the Four Noble Truths is also extremely advanced. As the Mahayana practitioner progresses on the path, there are many negative forces trying to harm. There is a saying that wherever there are people practicing Dharma, there are forces trying to obstruct them. So, one who engages in the practice of Dharma needs to have the skillful means to oppose negative forces. Of course, the Bodhisattva on the first bhumi has also gained the ability to tackle these negative forces. However, on the fifth bhumi, this ability becomes stabilized to the point at which negative forces are unable to prevail. The sixth bhumi is called directly manifested. It's also sometimes called approaching. From this stage onward, the perfection of wisdom is increasingly intensified. The Bodhisattva abides in the practice of the perfection of wisdom and also sees the suchness or thatness of interdependent origination. By abiding in a more advanced perfection of wisdom, the Bodhisattva is said to have gained cessation. Now, this does not mean the state of liberation. It is not exactly like the state of cessation mentioned in the Four Noble Truths. Here, cessation means the negation of true grasping. And true grasping means conceiving all the objects of perception as truly existent. So here the cessation means the negation of true grasping, which the Bodhisattva has now attained, because the practice of the perfection of wisdom is so highly developed on this stage. The opposite of wisdom is grasping, starting with true grasping and succeeded by other kinds of grasping. True grasping has already been cut off, but the residues of true grasping and other kinds of conceptual grasping remain. The process of complete removal of conceptual grasping starts with the sixth bhumi because of the Bodhisattva's advanced practice of the perfection of wisdom. This is why they are said to have attained cessation. We can say that cessation and the perfection of wisdom go together because the Bodhisattva on this stage excels in the practice of wisdom. So the sixth bhumi is kind of interesting because those who know the story of the Sakyalamdre, the Sakyalamdre was, shall we say, received by Virupa from a deity, and Virupa had given up his practice because he wasn't getting the results that he wanted. Actually, he was, he just didn't recognize them. And so he said, I'm not going to do Vajrayana anymore, and he took his mala and he threw it in the latrine. And that night he had a dream where a deity, actually Buddha Narayana, appeared to him and said, hey, what are you doing? That was a mistake. Go get your mala, wash it, put some perfume on it. I will be your guide. And I'm going to, basically she said, I'm going to give you the lamdre. For every night from that night on, Virupa attained another bhumi for 6 nights. And after 6 nights, he was at the sixth bhumi, which is at 1 trillion. Of course, he went on and finished them, but that was a very famous event in Sakya history. The seventh bhumi, gone far. This means gone far from conceptual grasping. The Bodhisattva now achieves a special ability to get rid of conceptual discriminating grasping, such as thinking, this is male, this is female, this is white, this is blue, and so forth. Because the extent of this ability to abandon conceptual grasping, he is said to have gone far. This ability begins to emerge in the Bodhisattva in the sixth bhumi and culminates on the seventh bhumi. According to Garampa Sonam Senge, this is the ability which most distinguishes this bhumi from the other six impure bhumis. Because of this attribute, when a Bodhisattva attains the seventh bhumi, he will surpass the Shravakas and the Pratyeka Buddhas, not only through merit, but also through wisdom. The first six bhumis are called impure, categorized that way. The last ones are classified in a different way. The level of attainment is just completely different. On this bhumi, the Bodhisattva accomplishes the perfection of means. It is said that through his perfection of means, a bodhisattva on the seventh bhumi, as distinct from those on the previous stages, achieves the special ability to enter into and rise from meditative absorption instant by instant. The eighth bhumi, the immovable. Once the bodhisattva achieves the eighth bhumi, there is no reversing. He will go straight towards Buddhahood. This is because the enlightened mind does not need to conceptualize. It is placed on an unshakable stage. Now, here one might well ask whether this means it's possible for bodhisattvas on the first seven bhumis to reverse. The answer is no. Not reversing is specifically mentioned here because from the eighth bhumi onwards, there is no conceptual grasping. On this stage, there arise virtues superior to those of the preceding bhumis. Prior to the seventh bhumi, the bodhisattva attained virtues primarily through exerting effort. From the eighth bhumi onwards, although enthusiasm is present, effort is no longer required to carry out the practice. The special perfection attained on this stage is the perfection of prayer or supplication. It was mentioned earlier that the bodhisattva on the first bhumi performs countless prayers, particularly the prayer of Samantabhadra. This prayer is considered very important since it includes all the other prayers. Now, the bodhisattva's prayers become even more effective and all prayers, including earlier prayers, are answered. The bodhisattvas remain in meditative equipoise in order to shed the abandonments of that stage with the aim of benefiting others. It is said that the Buddha awakens the bodhisattva from meditation, because once the bodhisattva has completely abandoned the things to be abandoned, there is no need to remain in meditation any longer. Ninth bhumi is called good intelligence. On the ninth bhumi, because of the superior perfection of force, the bodhisattva accomplishes the attribute of perfect understanding. It is said that there are four kinds of perfect understanding, known as the four individually correct cognitions, or sometimes known as correct cognizers. These are: 1. Perfect understanding of individual dharmas or terms. 2. Perfect understanding of individual meanings. 3. Perfect understanding of characteristics. And 4. Perfect understanding of individual confidence. Perfect understanding of dharmas means understanding all kinds of languages. Perfect understanding of individual meanings refers to the complete meanings of all words and expressions. Perfect understanding of characteristics is the understanding of the individual characteristics of each phenomena. Perfect understanding of confidence is explained in various ways. Generally, it refers to understanding the complex relationships between causes and results. The example that's usually given is the ability to understand the significance of the many colors on the feathers of a peacock. The Bodhisattva on this stage understands why each color is present and what has caused it. In the same way, however complex the results may be, the Bodhisattva will understand the individual causes without mixing one with another. And the tenth is called the cloud of doctrine. The Bodhisattva on the tenth stage accomplishes the perfection of transcendental wisdom. This is because all the obscurations have almost come to an end, and the more obscurations are abandoned, the brighter the transcendental wisdom becomes. This bhumi is called cloud of doctrine because it's like rain falling from the clouds and helping the crops to grow. The clouds are the Bodhisattva's transcendental wisdom. The falling rain is the teaching of the doctrine by the Bodhisattva. And the growth of the crops is the increase in the virtues of living beings. Through his transcendental wisdom, the Bodhisattva bestows teachings, and the living beings who receive the teachings develop virtuous seeds. That's why this bhumi is called the cloud of doctrine. The tenth bhumi is also interesting because if you think about it, when a bodhisattva attains that level, the bodhisattva is just on the verge of complete Buddhahood. But who's going to teach him at that level? Who's going to help him make the final step, so to speak? The answer is the Buddha who's in the Dharmakaya, or the truth body, will manifest a body, which is called the enjoyment body, just to go to the level of the 10th bhumi to teach those bodhisattvas so they can make the final step. And that's the only level where the enjoyment body manifests. We say the Buddha has three bodies: truth body, enjoyment body, emanation body. Emanation body would be any of the other emanations, like, for example, the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, came to India. That's an emanation body. He emanated that human body. When we're talking about the three different Buddha bodies, there are classifications also that say two or four, but for now we'll just stick with three. The second one, the enjoyment body, is what the Dharmakaya Buddha emanates to teach the 10th level bodhisattvas. These practices that we do, for example, the Chenrezi practice, you see the forearm white body of Chenrezi? That's an enjoyment body. That's what it looks like, to us anyway. And these other practices that we have, visualizations, those are enjoyment bodies. Those are the 10 bhumis. And all the numbers that go with them. Are there any questions? I went kind of fast through some of that. Let's do a very short meditation on what we just listened to and contemplated. So find a comfortable posture that works for you to sit for a few minutes. By this merit, may I take omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I may train to be just like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained by prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.